the Deputy Minister, if he wants to make any closing remarks, sorry, any opening remarks, followed by the DG, who will have 45 minutes to make a presentation.
Chair, thanks. No, from my side, I am attending, accompanying the DG and the department. It's the DG and the department's presentation. The minister made the critical input yesterday, so I'll be around to assist with questions. But if I can hand over to the DG, thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. DG, you have 45 minutes.
Yeah, thank you very much. I was very happy when you called it here to give a closing remark. You took away all the nerves from us. Okay, I think with 45 minutes, so at around 10:25. Thank you very much. Good morning, Chair, Deputy Minister, and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. We are here with the Executive Committee members of the Department and senior members to present our annual report for the year under review, 2021-2022. Chair, briefly before we move to the presentation that we have, I thought I should spend 5 minutes just to reflect on a few issues, mainly related to the presentation that we made last year. And as we appeared for that year, we did explain that we continued under that understanding that we were fixing a Boeing 747 whilst flying it. And our first duty was to make sure that we don't continue with the downward spiral that would have led us to a crash. And using a football metaphor, we did make a point at the time to see that we were not going to win the championship, but at least our target was to be in the top eight. And that's what we'll be reflecting on. Before we get to the content of our annual report, because of the joint responsibility that we take, one of fixing the department and putting it on a pedestal to the department that can deliver on its mandate, as we reflected last year that we developed a turnaround plan, and just a few issues around the turnaround plan without touching on all of them. To mention that we made a significant progress on the organizational redesign of the department. The Minister for Public Service and Administration has finally concurred with the proposed structure of the department, that for more than 8 years, the department never had an approved functional structure. And I think this was important for us in order to realign the department to focus on the strategic priorities that are identified in the strategic plan. But what is key and important in that new structure is our focus on building our ICT department, which has been in a crisis situation for the past 5 years, mainly working on the basis of contract deployment. Now we're trying to build skills that will help us rebuild our ICT system. And second to that, we've started a process of what we call devolution. We're decentralizing responsibilities and functions, warm bodies, personnel and budget to the provinces so that it goes directly to where the service delivery currently takes place. So our idea is that head office should be lean, nimble and agile and just serve as a net center to coordinate their strategies and plans that we seek to implement to improve our service delivery. Secondly, our strategic outlook that is informed by the mid-term strategic framework. We have made sure that we align everything with you, starting from the most junior officials. We had a service points at courts, at masters, that whatever that they do is aligned ultimately to what the department has to achieve in the MTSF period of 5 years. We 3 days ago came out of a strategic retreat where we did an appraisal of the first 3 years, from 2019 to June 2022, to see how far we're going in terms of achieving the targets that have been set. And we're mindful of the fact that the current administration is left with 18 months, and we needed to see that all the objectives and the priorities that have been set are achieved come March 31st, 2024. And we have developed interventions that we'll be implementing in the next 18 months, starting with the next 6 months until the end of the financial year. And we made this commitment that by next year, when we come here to present the final installment of the APP for the current administration, we give you the confidence that we are achieving the priorities of the LPSF. And thirdly, in terms of the human capital development, which is the major area we have identified, which is a challenge, we have conducted skills audit both for the senior managers and the general employees of the department, and we have started working on interventions, particularly around the areas of strategic capabilities, strategic management capabilities, and the Justice College has started working, conducting master classes and training, and we've made this commitment as senior managers that we need to be taken through training. Because the reality of the matter is that the majority of us here, lawyers and legal background, may not have had the opportunity to be exposed to, you know, training and capacity insofar as strategic management is concerned. But second to that as well, the major area that we think that is an area of attention is at the court management level. We have the responsibility to manage more than 740 something courts, and we need to build capacity and we've started. So we're making interventions there to make sure that the people who manage those courts as service delivery points as well, and making sure that there is access to justice, are properly trained, and including the clerks that predominantly make up the bulk of the staff complement of the department. So that's an area of intervention that we are working on. And finally, Chair, is the power modernization. The MTSF priorities, the Minister's first budget vote, has been clear in this area. The reality is that as we sit here, we have not made strides. And if you look at our performance for the year under review, the biggest challenge emanates from this area of our ICT system. We have taken a position that we are rebuilding from scratch, because the approach that was used over the years of project management, mainly managing contract, hasn't worked. So in terms of the new structure we have, we are building capacity. We are looking for the skills that we can find both in the public sector and the private sector to make sure that the department has capacity. And we're not saying we're only going to just build internal capacity, but we need at least to have a balance that 80% must be internal capacity, 20% can be capacity that comes from outside. However, we remain with the major challenge, and I think it's only fair for us that we mentioned it previously, the State Information Technology Agency Act is a serious problem. And I'm not the first to say this, we are not the first department to say this, and we are not afraid to put it on record. It's a major challenge for us when it comes to processes. It takes a long period for processes that procurement must be done through CETA, that we go through the processes and submit to CETA, but it takes all the time. It's a matter that has been raised even with the Minister for Communication. We have had the Minister sign letters to the Minister for Communication asking for certain areas that the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development be exempted from the CETA processes for obvious reasons that some of the systems are not necessarily what CETA is capable of assisting with us. And you will see as well when we talk about the integrated justice system is affected by the same situation, by the same challenge of CETA. Right across the IJS department, the police, ourselves, Home Affairs and others, correctional services, we have the same challenge. And we are making efforts to make sure that we engage with CETA as well. However, the challenge of court recording technology and central justice system, we know the challenge we had of a contract that has expired, and we've managed that with the current contract that we have that is valid until February next year. Significant progress has been made, Chair and honorable members. The information that we have as of end of last week is that we have a system that is 80% functional. And what we've tried to do is to make sure that at least every courthouse has a machine that functions in order to deal with the general challenges. I think when we come back to report, even on the oversight matters, we give full details around that system. However, an information has just come to attention that the system has reached its lifespan. So we have to reconsider now and say, what do we do for the way forward? And I will go for the market and look for system. That system was introduced, I think, in 2014. So 6 years to 7 years down the line, there are new systems that we believe in the market might be more agile, more modernized, that can assist us. Because with the current system, no matter how we can try to maintain it, we will continue to have challenges. The situation is not assisted by load shedding. The current challenges of the CRT and network assets that we're dealing with are not necessarily the original challenges that we have, are currently the challenges of load shedding. When there's load shedding and when the system comes back, there's a certain number of machines that get affected for a period of time. And from time to time, we have to get back to attending those. I thought, Chair, I should reflect on that before, and then we'll deal with the questions that you have already asked right immediately after the presentation. I'll ask my colleague, Mr. Asarok, who is the head of our strategy, to take the next 30 minutes and take us through the presentation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, teacher.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members of the Committee. I will be taking the committee through the presentation that will focus on the departmental performance for the year under review, which will be broken into performance by program. We'll also share with you the highlights of our performance, the progress on key legislation, challenges, audit outcomes, performance information, HR matters, as well as the expenditure report. Honorable members, I need to, if you go to slide number 6, this is a slide that just gives us an overall departmental performance. Our performance is sitting at 79%. Initially, Honorable Chairperson, we reported 80% achievement. However, after the audit, it was adjusted to 79%. Due to a target achieved a month after a set period. That is a framework on the mutual legal assistance. It was planned to be submitted on the 28th of February 2022, but was submitted a month later, but within the financial year under review. The next slide is just a comparison of our departmental performance over the years. What I need to say about this slide is that our performance is on an upward trajectory since 2020-2021 financial year, with a 29% increase in 2020-2021 and 19% increase in 2022. So basically there is a steady increase in our performance. This is the overall performance per program. Administration, we achieved 77%, cost services 87%. State Legal Services 79%, National Prosecution Authority 71%, and Auxiliary and Associated Services 100% achievement. In terms of the performance highlights, on our commitment to improve access to justice, Honorable Chair, we established additional 3 new special commercial crimes courts in both Eastern Cape, that is in Mthatha and East London, and KwaZulu-Natal in Pietermaritzburg. To date, we have 8 costs which exceeds the MCSF targets of 5. We also established 8 courts that comply with the strategy on universal access for persons with disabilities, and as well as 6 branch courts were converted into full service courts, that is in Vichy and Dimbaza courts in the Eastern Cape, Boises and Indonesia courts in Gauteng, Magudu and Suza courts in KwaZulu-Natal. In terms of our quest to modernize our administration, we used person identification and verification application, that is PIVA, to check more than 122,339 accused persons in near real time. It was also determined that over 38% of these individuals have prior criminal records that could be referenced further. Further, there is 2.8% of wanted persons that could be identified and linked to the sub-circulation as persons of interest for other cases. We electronically processed 1,989,000 cases via the IJS transversal hub using the IJS system integration between subs, NPA, and the DOJ and CD. We also developed, tested, and piloted phase 1. Of maintenance online services, expungement of criminal records online services, and of online services, civil online services, deceased estates and trust online services, which the Honorable Chairperson provides online registration and document submissions for new application. In terms of improvement of efficiency, we ensured that we deploy 443 cashless solutions, and this approach helps us to reduce the amount of money processed through points of service and thus minimize the risk of theft and robbery. On key legislation, we managed to process and enacted Bill C2X of Parliament, that is Act 2021, that is the Criminal and Related Matters Amendment Act of 2021, as well as the Criminal Law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act of 2021, the Domestic Violence Amendment. We also introduced the Land Court Bill to Parliament in the year under review. The key challenges we are currently sitting with is the negative audit outcome, the ICT in terms of our aging infrastructure, the high vacancy rate. However, I need to indicate, Honourable Chairperson, that since the beginning of the current year, there is actually a significant improvement in terms of filling vacant positions. So we're actually making good progress in this space. The next slide is just a summary of our audit outcome. Historically, from 2019 to 2022, consistently saw the vote account, which is the vote account and performance information, we've been getting a negative audit opinion, but we've also been doing well consistently, so in terms of funds under management, that is the Guardians, Current Fund, President's Fund, as well as the Federal Funds. In terms of the audit outcomes, we received a qualified audit opinion on the board account and predetermined objectives, and the basis of the audit qualification on the board account is contingent liabilities. The AG was unable to obtain sufficient appropriate audit evidence for contingent liabilities and established that we did not maintain accurate and complete records of the information used to determine the possibility of the outflow of litigations and claims against the department. And in terms of the predetermined objectives, Program 3, which is State Legal Services, was selected for the audit. And there were offices that have been audited, as listed below, the State Attorney's Office, International Legal Relations, as well as the Master's Office. In terms of the Guidance Fund, CARA, and the President Fund, as I indicated, they also sustained audit. Now, in terms of our performance information, that is slide number 16, actually, sorry, slide number 18. On the year under review, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, 6 out of the 8 targets on modernizing and digitizing justice service platforms were achieved. So in essence, we have ensured that maintenance services are available on the TGA portal online, that is implemented. Trust services available. Trust services, as I said, those are the ones that have been piloted in the year under review as pilot number one. Phase one, sorry. Now, if then I move to the next slide, we also achieved 12 out of 17 targets on improving organizational capability and good governance. In this one, our vacant SMS posts were at 15% at the end of the year under review. However, there is significant improvement in the current year, as I indicated. We also achieved 50% targets on women occupied senior management services, as well as the LP10 positions. We completed 6 initiatives to implement the reconfigured macro structure. We also trained 6,706 officials in line with the workplace skills plan through the Justice College and HRT unit. 75% of reported corruption cases investigated for officials were finalized. 63% of disciplinary hearings were finalized within 90 days from the date of opening of the matter. 88% of grievances were resolved within 90 days from the date of opening of the matter. 119 backlogs on disciplinary hearing cases for misconduct were also resolved. And 113 backlog cases on grievances were resolved in the year under review. In terms of the percentage of significant findings finalized, we have done 68%, as well as the percentage of fruitless and wasteful expenditure reduced, we decreased that by 80%. We unfortunately did not manage to meet our target in terms of the irregular expenditure, the reduction of irregular expenditure, percentage of undisputed and valid invoices paid within 30 days, percentage of rate and value of discretionary procurement allocated to exempted micro enterprise and qualifying SMMEs, PSEs. We managed to achieve an increase on the percentage of rent value of discretionary procurement allocated to women was at 60%. And then funding model for the implementation of the NEP was developed and submitted to Minister for approval by the target date. What we also failed to achieve is the percentage of expungement finalized within 3 months since the receipt of the complete application. In terms of slide number 21, we conducted 371 public education to create awareness on the 25th anniversary of the Constitution and promote constitutional rights education, and 394 public education activities on justice services that includes criminal, civil and family law services. We had 5 sex trafficking in persons campaigns in collaboration with other departments, 7 sustained and visible anti-xenophobia campaigns, 17 awareness sessions on the LGBTIQ rights, and 2 reports on the implementation of programs to commemorate the 25th anniversary of the Constitution were submitted to Minister for approval. In terms of our contribution to increase access to justice services outcome, we managed to achieve 11 out of the 13 targets that we set for ourselves. As required by the Article 15 of the Presidential Summit Declaration Against the GBVF 2019 and the National Strategic Plan on the GBVF, we completed phase 4 of Femicide Watch Dashboard with available data. We postponed less than 0.13% of cases due to unavailability of court administrative staff. There was 94% of child justice preliminary inquiries that were finalized within 30 days after date of first appearance. 82% of final assault clearance cases issued within 10 working days from the date of receipt of the application. Unfortunately, we did not achieve the target on establishing special offense support at designated courts. Out of the 25 targets for the year under review, 78 of our courts are compliant with the minimum standards for universal access for persons with disabilities. 90% of family advocate litigation matters were finalized within 12 months from the date of opening matter. 92% of family advocate non-litigation matters were finalized within the 6 months from the date of the opening of the matter. 91% of maintenance matters were finalized within 90 days from the date of proper service process. We also submitted social compact discussion document to Minister for approval. There were 6 targeted branch courts that were converted into full service courts. The case backlog reduction framework was submitted for approval, but unfortunately was referred back to the department for further input. In terms of the maintenance improvement framework, it was developed and submitted to Minister for approval by the end of the financial year. We also achieved both planned targets that contribute to reducing crime and corruption through effective prosecution outcome. And those are the 3 additional dedicated specialized commercial crimes courts, as well as we submitted a position paper on the review of existing anti-corruption legislation and institutional arrangements to Minister for approval by the end of the financial year. Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, I also need to report that all 7 planned targets that are aimed at improving master's services were achieved. We achieved 74% of liquidation and distribution accounts in large estates, that is more than 250,000. that were examined within 31 days of receipt of all required documents. 78% of letters of appointment were issued in deceased estate within 21 days from receipt of all required documents. 80% of guidance funds beneficiaries were received within 40 days from receipt of the required documents. 87% of certificates of appointments were also issued in all bankruptcy matters within 10 days from the receipt of required documents. 88% of liquidations and distribution accounts in bankruptcy matters were examined within 15 days from the receipt of all required documents. And 62% of letters of authority were issued in trust within 21 days from the receipt of all required documents. We also ensured that 94% of letters of appointments were issued in curatorship estate within 15 days from the receipt of all required documents. We also achieved two of the three targets that are aimed at reviewing and replacing colonial apartheid era justice related legislation. That is, we managed to ensure that we submit 8 bills and regulations to Minister for approval. We unfortunately only submitted 1 colonial apartheid era related legislation for approval by the Minister for submission to Cabinet. However, we also submitted 11 research papers to the South African Law Reform Commission for approval. In contributing to transformation of state legal service outcome, we achieved all 5 planned targets. We managed to ensure that 2 policies, that is the briefing and outsourcing of legal work, defending and opposing in matters, were submitted to Minister for approval. We submitted and Minister approved policy on the management of the state litigation contingent liability. 64% of litigation cases were settled. 89 of legal opinions were finalized within 30 days from the date of receipt of the instructions. 86% suggested bills and supported legislation were finalized within 30 days from the date of receipt of the instructions. We also achieved 83% of value of briefs allocated to the PDI practitioners. 29% of value of briefs allocated to female practitioners was also achieved. We unfortunately, however, did not achieve the following targets, that is the percentage of briefs allocated to female legal practitioners. We missed this target by 1%. And also the policy guideline on the control of senior counsel status implemented, and policy framework and accompanying draft regulations on the control of senior legal practitioners, that is advocates, attorneys submitted to the minister for approval by the end of the financial year. Now on slide number 31, on the outcome of advancing constitutionalism, human rights and the rule of law, we achieved 5 of the 7 planned targets. We achieved a rapid response mechanism to respond to the incidence of racist and xenophobic offences for hate crimes established that was submitted and approved by the minister. We also identified data sets for the development of virtual repository. We ensured that 1 country report was submitted to DECO for all my submissions to the bodies. We did, Honorable Chairperson, 57% out of 80% targeted for the valid request for explanation and mutual legal assistance in criminal matter process submitted to the Director General within 20 days from the date of receipt. We missed this target. We also submitted a framework on extradition and mutual legal assistance to the Minister for Approval on the 28th of February, as I indicated earlier, as planned. But unfortunately, we missed that date. We also submitted a month later, but within the year under review. Unfortunately, the AG did not agree with us on this one. The framework on treaty obligations was developed, finalized and submitted to Minister for approval. The framework to monitor the implementation of constitutional court judgments submitted to Minister for approval. In terms of the last program, which is program number 5, I need to say, Honourable Members and Chairperson, that as one of the MTSF priorities in support of modernization and digitization within the justice cluster, all the 3 planned targets were achieved. We achieved and managed to achieve actually four revised IJS programs, governance frameworks, structures, and they are implemented. And there's one government department which was connected to the transversal platform. And there is seven IJS DPME assessment reports, recommendations that were implemented. I will pause here as far as performance information. I've got a few more slides in terms of human resources. In terms of HR, this is just an overall overview of the methods of HR. We managed to focus on the following areas. In the year under review, we focused on the creation of a sound employee relationship, provision of opportunities for a balanced and healthy workforce through employee health and wellness. We reviewed the post-establishment and vacancies, provided policy guidance and strategic directions to deliver on HR management, organizational development and design as an enabler to deliver on the departmental annual performance plan and strategic objectives, monitoring the implementation of the MTEF human resource plan for the year 2020 to 2025, monitoring the implementation of the employment equity plan in the period of 2020 to 2025. By the end of the year, Honorable Chairperson, this is just a synopsis of our capacity within the department. We were sitting at a total of 16,150 filled positions. That includes magistrates and vacant positions. And just a short analysis of the workforce, 78% of our workforce is in program two, that is court services. And of these, 23.8% is young people or youth, and a total of 9.3% is in the retirement age category. 80% of this retirement age is in court services, and 21.1% senior managers are in the retirement age category. 58% of the workforce is concentrated at entry-level salary files, of which 29.5% are young people or youth. Now, this next slide is just a synopsis of how we look like in terms of the employees. You see, Honorable Chairperson and members, that the organization is driven by women. There is 60% of capacity occupied by women. And then in terms of the demographics, there is a significant percentage of 70%, which is African, and followed by both Indians as well as whites, and then you've got colors. And in terms of our employees with disability, we were sitting in the year under review, we're sitting at 2% by the end of the financial year. In terms of the vacancies, the overall vacancies of the department by the end of the financial year was sitting at 8.6%. And in terms of the SMS vacancies, by the end of the financial year, we're sitting at 16.4%. But as I indicated, that we've actually made significant improvement in terms of that space. On that note, I would like to pause here and hand over to my colleague from finance. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Colleagues and DG. I'll be doing a presentation on the financial performance and the report of the Auditor General. If we could go to slide 43, please. The department's financial expenditure for the financial year 21-22 amounted to 21.275 billion against the final appropriation amounting to 21.905 billion. This translates to an expenditure performance of 97.1% and the resultant understanding of 380 million. The recorded performance is 2.2% above the previous financial year performance, which was at 94.9%. If we go to the next slide, we will then see the breakdown of the appropriation and the expenditure per program, showing us now in terms of the program, what was the spending page program. If we go to the next slide, which is slide 45, essential, that's in terms of economic classification, to then say where did we spend in terms of compensation, goods and services, payments of financial assets, transfers and subsidies, and payments for capital assets. If you look at the underspending, the variance, the 680 million, the bulk of it is looking under compensation of employees, which is which amounts to 389 million. The recorded underspending is made to the following reasons: vacant posts and cost of programs, the magistrate salaries, and lower than anticipated payment of settlement bonuses. Less than anticipated expenditure on private leases. You can move to the next slide. And municipal services. Delays in awarding the procurement of ICT licenses, as well as underperformance of the IJS, CJS. Lower than anticipated payment for lead gratuities, resulting from national attrition for magistrates, as well as slow progress by the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure in implementing the planned court infrastructure project. If we go to the next slide will then talk to the response to the Auditor General Report. On the Auditor General Report, the Department for the Qualification and the Qualification Items was contingent liability. The Department submitted financial statements with a contingent liability balance of 7 billion. Regardless of all efforts that management implemented in addressing the 2021 findings, AG raised substantial issues regarding the department methodology to assess possibility of the outflow of the cash in the litigations and claims against the department. When the matter was raised by the AG, the department tried to make corrections and resubmit the information. However, there was not enough time to make those necessary amendments and information was not readily available, thus the information was not accepted by the AG and the qualification. Management have reviewed the recommendations of the Auditor General and highlighted the management report and then committed to implement the recommendations through an audit action plan. This action plan aims to implement corrective measures to address internal control deficiencies identified by the Auditor General. The biggest challenge that we had with the contingent liability was the fact that our guidelines talked mainly to the legal aspect of the contingent liability. It did not also take into account the accounting or the modified cash standard aspect of it. So what we have now done, now we have redrafted those guidelines, now take into account both the legal and the financial accounting aspects, which we then hoping it will address the issue that was raised by the AG when it comes to the methodology or assessing possibility of outflows. We will then redraft the contingent liability register in line with these guidelines and submit to the AG to audit as part of the inquiry audit. So this will give us a head start in terms of whether or not we are on the right track. If we move on to the next slide, in addition to the qualification, the main emphasis of the items that were raised in the audit report, the first one being the material impairment on receivables. In the financials, we disclosed an amount of impairment of 1.6 billion in compared to 1.3 billion which we recorded last year. Now, when it comes to the receivables, client departments continue to struggle with payment of services rendered by state attorneys or counsel appointed by state attorneys. Some of the issues are historical and records were not kept. The department needed to write off some of these amounts in the previous financial year. However, approval to utilize savings was not approved by National Treasury. Management will continue to work with the state attorney and the department to improve the process of collecting on this outstanding balance. This also resulted in a paragraph which was listed in the audit report, which states that the department did not ensure effective and appropriate steps to collect all money due to it, as required by Section 381C of the PFMA. The next emphasis of this item that was raised to the statement of corresponding figures. In the financial statement, we had to list some figures as we realized while compiling the financial statement that there were errors
CFO, you are too fast. I'm concerned that other people, especially people who might not have the background of what you are talking about, will find it difficult to hear you.
I'll reflect on the emphasis of meta items that were raised in the audit report. These related to the impairments that were done on the receivables. There were impairments disclosed amounting to 1.6 billion in comparison to 1.3 billion, which was disclosed last year. Now, this relates to the money that are owed to the department resulting from legal services that are offered to all the government departments. The client departments, they continue to struggle with the payment of the services rendered by the attendees and the council appointed by the attendees. Some of these issues are historical and we find that their instances where records were not kept, so it becomes a challenge to follow up on these debts. The department also identified some of these debts that were due to be written off, and we approached National Treasury to request that we utilize any. However, this was not approved by National Treasury and those write-offs could not be implemented. Management, however, continues to work with the Office of the State Attorney and the client department in order to see how we can improve on the process of collecting this amount that is due to the department. This issue also resulted in the AG raising a paragraph in the audit report which says that the department did not ensure effective and appropriate steps to collect all money that are due to it as required by Section 381(c)(9) of the PSMA. The next item that was raised as an emphasis of meta item is on the restatement of corresponding figures. When preparing the financial statements, we have to restate and correct some of the figures that were disclosed in the last year's financial, because we realized that there were some errors in those figures. This is related mainly to the disclosure of the IGF asset management issues. So AG raised that as an emphasis of meta item. If we move on to the next slide. The AG also raised the issue that there were material adjustments on the submitted financial statements, which then result in the department not complying with Section 41 of the PSMA. These material statements related to IJS assets, lease pay liability, and accounts receivable. However, these misstatements were subsequently corrected in the audited financial statements. On irregular expenditure, the department had an increase of irregular of 900 million, which resulted in a non-compliant paragraph also included by the AG in the report. They also raised an issue of payment of invoices within 30 days, so that the department is not complying with the payment of invoices within 30 days. The department managed to achieve 99% of unsubstantiated invoices paid within 30 days, within 30 days. In an attempt to not deal with this and ensure to get 100%, this item is now becoming an expanding item on the agenda. If you go to the next slide, that talks to irregular expenditure. It then gives us a breakdown of the irregular expenditure balance, which we open with 2 billion and ended with 2.9, then showing the increase of 900 million. Now, if you look at the increase of 900 million, it's made up mainly of an amount of 850 million relating to security guarding contract, where, according to the AGSA, there were alleged fraudulent documents that were submitted to the department at the time that the contract was awarded, hence it was disclosed as an irregular expenditure. However, the department has now come to a realization that this is actually a case of fraud and not irregular expenditure, and currently consulting National Treasury in order to compare with it to remove this from the irregular expenditure register and it rather be dealt with as a case of fraud as an irregular expenditure. The next, the next amount of this 900 is 32.7 million, which relates to procurement of legal services through the Office of the State Attorney. Now, this resulted in irregular because proper ATM processes were not followed. In an attempt to now deal with this challenge, the department has implemented a procurement process to comply with the PSAV requirements until such time that the framework contract with National Treasury can be finalized. The balance of the 900 million is 7.8, which relates to various transactions which resulted from non-compliance with supply chain management processes. This includes in the main procurement of the offsite storage and library services. These matters are currently under final determination for referral to National Treasury for condolment. If you look at our irregular expenditure balance, a total of about 73% of that balance has been referred to National Treasury for condolment or to concur for it to not be irregular. And we are awaiting feedback from National Treasury in that regard. If we move to the next slide, it talks to the fruitless expenditure. As I did one match, we had a fruitless expenditure of 960,000, which is a reduction from that opening balance of 2.4 million. Most of the cases are relating to fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And cases in respect of no-shows where officials or witnesses did not honor the bookings that they made on their behalf. There is one case to the value of 211,000 in respect of a mobile home which was purchased for a province that has never been utilized due to technical challenges. Cases to the value of 2.5 were paid off in the previous financial year, and in the media, we only reported cases to the value of 264,000. 1.689 were resolved or written off or recovered during the 2021-22 financial year. We can move on to the next slide. The department appreciates the guidance provided by the oversight body during the year. The recommendation will go in resolving service delivery issues and the control environment. The department remains committed to implementing those recommendations. Thank you.
Chair, with your permission, though I lost 5 minutes from the acting CFO slowing down, but we have 7 minutes that the floor will utilize before we get to 10:25. Just to clarify some few issues that are related to the presentation. The first one, Chair, being that you will observe that from an under-expenditure point of view, we have increased our expenditure. We are sitting at 97%. Which was the call for the previous year. We had over a billion of under expenditure, and now it was around 600 to 700 million, which mainly as well driven by magistrate salaries, which are ring fence, that's one. But secondly, the CapEx budget, the infrastructure, CPWI, which is when we don't have the control over. Had it not been for those two items, we probably could have been sitting at 99.9%. Secondly, the issue of the contingent liability. The end of the previous financial year, when we thought we had come close, the issues that the Auditor General had raised, it was more about cleaning up the register. So we spent a lot of time last year making sure that the files that we have and everything was a true reflection of what is now supposed to be in our contingent liability. So to fix the opening and the closing balances, and only to find that at 11th hour with 3 days to go, Auditor General said to us, we can see this clean register, but you didn't deal with probabilities. Probabilities meaning that if someone is suing the department for 5 million, what is the likelihood that we are going to pay that 5 million? So basically that's what brought us here into having our contingent liability being qualified. We have made a commitment to Auditor General that we are working on it. We'll give it to them by the first week of November so that they can provisionally audit it and return it back to us. And internal audit as well will have looked at it. In terms of our workforce, we are committing to increase the number of young people, as people below the age of 65. As we stand today, in our more than 160 as senior managers across the departments, we don't have any person who is below the age of 35. So that's a matter as well that we are prioritizing to say we need to inject some level of youth. Part of it is function of the requirements for public service, that a certain number of years of experience are required. So you will imagine that people start accumulating experience in public service and in senior management or to qualify for senior management. By that time, they would have broken out of the bracket of being under the age of 35. Now, we continue to have this challenge of departments not paying for legal services. I have raised this many times before, so part of what we are considering is a possibility that we tell departments that we will not assist them to brief counsel if they have not given us a written commitment that they have money available. Because some of these departments now, some of them are bankrupt, they because of medical legal claims without mentioning specifically which department, but even across the provinces. And they come across now start disputing some of the invoices and all that. Sometimes they dispute the invoices, they realize the end of the financial year is coming, they pay back, they pay the very same invoice that they were disputing. So it's an area that we are working on. And my understanding is what the increase on the regular expenditure, which is from the previous financial year, is it's the security contract of 2016. Just wanted to clarify that it's not coming from the previous financial year. Our commitment is to reduce really our irregular expenditure register to by half if possible. And that's why we're going through the processes to make sure that it's not an irregular but it was a fraud that must be dealt with in that manner. And then finally, we have these challenges you'll see. This procurement. So if it says we didn't follow processes of procurement, if not general procurement, we'll procure goods, but it's the procurement of state legal services. Where Treasury argues that is a procurement, you must get lawyers to give us three quotations. And it's a serious problem. And I'm sure the legal fraternity through their different formations will also have raised it with the portfolio committee. But lawyers, by the nature of their work, they cannot give us quotations. They give us quotations today, we brief the other, and we come back again, they give us another quotation, we don't brief them. And they have come to a conclusion that we are just using them for us to comply with Treasury regulations. So we have engaged Treasury. We proposed a framework which we have been working on the whole of last year, but Treasury hasn't come back to us. And so this is what Treasury, I mean, Auditor General calls us not complying with procurements, mainly in the area of procurement of legal services, which is a problem. And we hope that we can finalize the discussion. Finally, Chair, let me move to the question that the comment that the Auditor General had made on our performance information. The Auditor General, the previous year, audited program 2, which mainly relates to the administration of calls and court services. And they picked up issues and we addressed those issues. But the year under review, Auditor General audited program 3. Now, Program 3 has about 5 components, which are mainly the legal core business of the department. The chief legal advisors, the masters, constitutional development, legislative development, and state attorneys. And Auditor General, after we're done with the annual report, has found that there were about 3 indicators relating to the work of the state attorneys, which, in terms of the information that we have, their challenge is that they couldn't find additional important information that would validate what we had presented. And on that basis, they qualified those indicators and we accepted. The approach we had taken, Chair, from our part was to say, Auditor General is an important institution, but as we try to turn around the department, we will work with the Auditor General. It is for this reason that we have worked hard to cultivate a harmonious relationship with the Auditor General to take into account whatever that they give us and seek to implement it. However, the strong statement that they presented, we met with the Auditor General on Monday to take us through the issues that they will be presenting to the Minister and the Honorable Members here. And unfortunately, that part will not have come out in the management report that we will have responded to, because we will not believe that we accepted the qualification in those 3 indicators, even though we know the work has been done, but we had to accept the limitation in relation to what they expected to validate those. But we are continuing to work on it. So the issue I've raised about the system, Chair, of modernization is also a major issue, because a huge department with all the service points that we have if we don't have a proper system that works, that gives us the information. But also just to bring to the point that in that 12 months of the year under review, 3 months of that was when we were going through the ransomware attack. So we worked hard to make sure that we keep the information manually and balance that information. However, the reality is that if you don't have an effective system, you don't have an IT system, and you're able to record information, you have this challenge. So part of the area that we'll be working on as well is around the state attorney to get a system that will assist to make sure that we have records of all the information around the work that is being done by the department. With those few words, Chair, it is our honor to present the report to you. I thank you.
Thank you very much, DJ. It was few words of stealing the time that you have given me. You have exceeded it by 6 minutes. But it's fine because you are really defending yourself. So we thought we must be lenient. Honorable members, I have the following members who are going to be asking questions or making comments. Honorable Horn, followed by Honorable Swart, Honorable Yako, Honorable Breitenbach, Honorable Nibor Tohent, in that order. Honorable Swart?
After Horn, Chief.
Oh. Yeah, no, my apologies. Honorable Horn.
Yes, thank you, Chair, and good morning to all colleagues as well as the delegation from the department. And thank you for the effort in preparing this presentation. Chair, one at the outset would want to extract some positives, and it is unfortunately difficult. We want to place reliance on the assurance of the DG that by this time next year we would clearly see how the corner has been turned. And maybe if one can say a few positives that might indicate that is at least potentially possible, is the finding by the Auditor General that there's an improved assurance level afforded by the accounting officer and the executive authority. And even though the targets have not been met, it is also good to see that the vacancy rate on senior management level has improved. But that's more or less where the good story ends in my assessment, Chair. We must at the outset say the repeat findings is a big worry. We hear the explanation. But once again, from where we as a committee are sitting, we must say that the issue of the contingent liabilities was not a new one last year. And it remains a big source of discomfort on our part that even if it happened at the 11th hour, that this still has not been solved. Also, the despite some appointments in the financial division of the department on a senior level, the repeat finding about supply chain management irregularities is a big concern. And now, if you add to that the new finding of a lack of consequence management, we must say that that's simply not acceptable. On the irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, Chair, I think we need a further explanation. Yes, the target was a decrease of 70%. Now it's an increase of 43%. Then we are informed it's about an extension of a contract of 2016. The way we've been advised as a committee is that it's all about a contract extension without National Treasury approval. Now that is... If that is the case, it's of course a simple compliance matter that has not been attended to. But now today we hear, and it's not really part of the annual report or the AG report, that now the department has now decided that this is a matter of fraud. And the question then is, Chair, what is now the status then of that contract? Has it then, on the basis that the department has now concluded that there was not only a financial irregular or a compliance issue in play, but really possible criminal conduct, has that contract at least been cancelled? So I think we must ask that question. Then, Chair, in respect of a number of really operational targets.
Sorry, Honorable Horn, are you talking about the 863 million security contracts?
Yes, yes, Chair. Then on a number of operational targets, Chair, I think we as a committee will fail in our duty to say that the absolute failure to make any headway really makes a mockery of the expressed commitment of Parliament and government to the fight against gender-based violence. I mean, we cannot find a comfort in the fact that there was a GBV summit and there's a GBV dashboard. If we take into consideration that over the last two financial years, first the target of 27 sexual offences courts designated was not achieved last year, then we were informed it was really sort of a technical issue that hampered it to happen in time, a memo that had to be signed. And yet this year, we are told that out of the new target of 100, zero has been achieved. I mean, just saying those figures really must madden all of us, because this is the tangible way in which the criminal justice system must be able to give effect to those legislation which we as Parliament were put under tremendous pressure to get through, which the President finally signed. So that's the first issue. The second issue is it's all well and fine to inform us about progress with legislation, but there was also an undertaking from the Department regarding those that trifecta of bills, that they were in a parallel way, so to speak, with the development of the bills already developing the regulations. And yet, those regulations are nowhere to be seen. So we must ask for an answer on that issue as well, please, Chair. Then on the last year, there was a target, which was also a zero performance on, of 18 audiovisual remand systems being put in place. I don't see in the annual report this year any target related to it, but when we met with Legal Aid South Africa, they informed this committee that they find it a very frustrating and a factor that impacts on their ability to also perform their duties and functions, the fact that audiovisual remand systems are not functional and are not rolled out. So the target seemingly has disappeared, but yet we must ask what is going on there. The same, Chair, with infrastructure, and with infrastructure, of course, we firstly talk about court buildings. Again, a zero performance in respect of unplanned maintenance. The one thing, the lasting impression we as a committee formed when we undertook the oversight visits is that, yes, it's good to strengthen those relationships with the Auditor General, but there's serious deficiencies in relationships with Public Works, and there's a serious gap in dealing proactively with the need to maintenance of our court buildings, and the report unfortunately doesn't say enough. Then, Chair, the last two issues I want to raise is the court recording technology. Yes, our information or feedback is also that at least there's one functional device in every court building. I mean, we can have a long debate as to whether that's really good enough. We hear stories from magistrates as to how they now really schedule to work in shifts, so to speak, when there is a trial that they have on their calendar in order to make for everyone to make use of that one device. Firstly, that's not good enough. But secondly, on the feedback of the DG today, it's now on the table, well known that that extension of the contract or new award to the same service provider is running out in February. I think we must ask what systems are in place if this is now a defunct system, really. It cannot be upgraded anymore. For us not to find ourselves in a Groundhog Day situation that from 1 March onwards next year again, we sit with courts that cannot function. The last issue, Chair, I wanted to raise is on the SIU. The department says 99% of the invoices is paid within the 30 days. Yet the AG came and reported that this department is one of the top 10 contributors to the issues the SIU have with state entities and departments, about a 300 million rand that they're not able to collect. And furthermore, the department, the AG said, it's one of the four entities which they cannot give any room to say they're also financially struggling and therefore maybe that's the reason why they're not paying. The department was put in that green bracket there by the AG when he talks about that debt to the SIU. So we must ask, why then, given the fact that the DG also concluded his remarks by saying that we struggle to get other departments to pay us, why is this department not paying the SIU? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Horn. In addition to your question, this committee wrote to the department, in fact to the minister, on the same issue that there is a complaint that SIU has not been paid. So I really do think that DG should be one of your first responses, because we did follow up with the minister and yourselves to that SIU is paid, because it's really bad that an entity within your portfolio would have such a complaint about you. So we are really looking forward to your response to that. Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the DG and to the officials for the input, for the comprehensive reporting. I think just at the outset, we do commend the department on the improvement in the overall performance in certain regards. It was pointed out by the minister yesterday that the performance has improved to 79% from 66% in 2021. But clearly, one has to contextualize that. Before I do that, I also want to say it's commendable, the three special commercial crimes courts. I'm very interested in that figure with the IJS, the 1,989,246 cases, because I think, Chair, we can engage with the NPA. When you start with that number of cases, where do you end up with convictions? And I think it will help us when we... I think Honourable Brayton, by questioning percentages of convictions when you start with a figure of 1.9 million now. But that's for a separate issue. The 443 cashless solutions, there is some progress. However, as other colleagues have pointed out, when we're on the ground and as members of Parliament, we are consistently, frequently requested to assist with many, many different delays when it comes to the Master's Office, when it comes to maintenance, when it comes to court processes, you can imagine. For example, yesterday, and maybe you had the Judge Cameron saying a murder case taking 7 years, whatever the reasons are. I'm not saying it's the department, it could be the NPA, it could be anyone. But let me just comment on the overall performance. DG, in May this year, the committee expressed its disappointment or disapproval of the exclusion of certain indicators and the reduction of targets. And that was in May, obviously after the financial year. So the question arises, to what degree has the improvement of the 79%, to what degree is it attributable to that reduction of targets and indicators? And I think it's a bit of a mixed bag. There has been improvement in some regards, but there has been, when measured against that reduction, and I think next year we might see a change because there was a letter and the minister indicated they will review that reduction in those targets. So one's got to consider that. I think, Chair, it's also important The DG tried to explain the working with the AG and some of the issues there, but we as obviously as the Oversight Committee have to take very seriously, particularly the repeat findings that the AG has made, and we would like to hear further from the DG. When it regards those repeat findings and the accuracy of the evidence that is given to the Auditor General, the Auditor General, in fact, uses when she raises the material findings relating to the usefulness and reliability of reported performances information. And that particularly relates to the State Legal Services Program. And then that, of course, relates to the contingent liability issue, which I raised yesterday with the minister. I do understand we are considering a report at a certain time this year and that improvements have been done since then. But I'd like, when I asked the minister the contingent liability, he indicated it was 146 billion and that the program of managing the contingent liability had now been accepted. So in the new financial year, we get a better understanding of that. Is that a confirmed figure? Related to that then, when one speaks about the State Attorney's Office, we obviously are concerned, Chair, about the Solicitor General, that extent, the fact that that position has not been finalized. It's still temporary appointment. We need that finalized. And there are, if I understand it correctly, there are 5 State Attorney's Offices where the heads are not appointed yet. Could we have clarity as to the progress in that regard? That was as the financial year. The issue relating then with the State Attorney is, and we would have to raise this with the SIU, the investigations into the State Attorney's Office. I don't know if the department would be able to comment on that. But the issue which the DG raised, which I share his concerns, and that is the fact of client departments not paying for services rendered by the State Attorney when it comes to briefing of counsel, particularly the costs. And if I understand correctly, the state attorney and the department runs a significant overdraft facility to pay those expenses. When it's not repaid, obviously you've got interest, you've got other issues relating to public finances. And I think we need to support the DG in taking a far harder stance to client departments who are not paying. I'm quite disturbed that some amounts have to be written off, in fact. And it could be that one reaches the stage, I don't know if it's permissible, but in private practice, when you take on a case as an attorney, you have to have a deposit. Now, I don't know if one has, if one can reach that stage because there are many urgent applications, but I think we need to really come alongside and try to assist the department in that regard. I think I'd like to get a feedback on the improvement in the Master's Office. Obviously, we know the Master's Office plays a significant role in our economy. And one of the issues related to the 29,803 letters of executorship and authority that were outstanding, I think, as at 1 March, as at the end of the financial year. Could we get an indication? It was anticipated that it would be cleared by the end of December. What is the progress in that regard? Because that's a significant number of outstanding issues there. And then we also know that I think it was the Toyandu and the Mthatha Masters Courts are in a deplorable state, absolutely deplorable state, the bad condition there. What is the department doing, working with Public Works to try to improve that issue? Whilst I'm talking about infrastructure, Chair, you'll remember when we visited the SCA, I'd just like to get feedback on some of the issues that were raised at the SCA relating to Public Works. The issue of the air conditioning, lifts, roof. Is there progress in addressing those issues? And what was a major issue was the issue of load shedding occurring at the Supreme Court of Appeal, but apparently not at the High Court, which obviously impacts the SCA in its workings, which is unacceptable. I have a number of questions. I just want to touch on a few more Chair, if you'd allow me, that we work
Honourable Sir, your last question, don't you think that it would be much more relevant if we ask the Office of the Chief Justice, especially with regard to the FCA and the High Court?
Absolutely. I agree with that, Chair, so then I withdraw that aspect.
Okay.
Chair, we work very closely and we are always highly commendable about the state law advisors that help us with the bills, and we put a lot of pressure on them. I just need a confirmation from the DG whether it is correct that there was underspending of 84 million on the legislative development and law reform program, because as those lawyers that help us drafting are excellent, but clearly they are severely undercapacitated and they need additional staff. So it would be a concern if there's an underspending there, if that can be addressed or confirmed, or tell me I'm making a mistake. Or secondly, what steps are being taken to improve the capacity there, given the crucial role that they play in assisting us? I mean, we passed that bill in 1 month, the Smith judgment relating to the drugs and drug trafficking. And that was so commendable towards the department and the committee in doing it in 1 month. But clearly that is an aspect that does need addressing. Chair, I think at that stage, these are the questions for the time being. I've used a lot of time, but I do want to appreciate the time and appreciate the work of so many officials at various levels. But I do want to emphasize that when we're on the ground, we often get a different picture. And I think that is what is the challenge to us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Swart. Honorable Yako.
Jabulela, Chair, and Jabulela to everyone who's here. Chair, I'm not going to be long, I hope. I want to thank the department for the presentation. I do, however, want to echo maybe the words of previous speakers. I think when the department comes to present to members of parliament, I'm not sure perhaps if it was something that happened historically where they would present and then members would just accept what is presented. However, we've had an opportunity to go directly to the buildings, directly to master's offices, directly to the courts, and we've seen for ourselves what actually is happening. And what is presented does not reflect what is actually happening on the ground, because first of all, you don't have an ICT system. So you may say that you have an IT system. However, what good is that IT system if you don't have a backup generator that you've invested in as a department in all your buildings? And secondly, what good does an ICT system help if most of your work is done manually? And then when that work is done manually, you don't have a proper filing system for any of the things that you do. And it's very frustrating for your workforce as well, because now they have to do bulk of the work and bulk of the hours that they spend is finding those files instead of actually assisting and doing the jobs that they're supposed to be doing. So I have an issue with that, and it's been long going, and it doesn't seem like there's a proper solution with regards to the ICT system around the Department of Justice. And that worries me, because we are advancing as the years are going, and if we are lacking in South Africa in terms of that, we're going to find ourselves in trouble. And by the time we found ourselves having to then adapt to world standards, it's going to cost us a lot of money that we don't have. And it's because there's no will from the department itself to find itself and do the work that it's supposed to do to mitigate that gap. Secondly, I have an issue with the buildings in the department not being owned by the department, but leased from public works. As you remember, we went to NCATA in the master's office, and it's deplorable. You're renting 100,000 for a church building that is in shambles. It's a shack. And yet you're supposed to have files there on a shack. Anyone can burn that place down and you will not find any of the documents that people need for the legacies of their families. So for me, it doesn't seem like it's just lip service. It's like basically passing the buck and just giving us what you think we want to hear. I also have an issue with the constant irregular expenditure that is being reported as if it's nothing, and it's a lot. There has to be processes in place for you to be able to write off something as irregular expenditure, there is a process. I mean, I've been there. At municipal level, there's a process. I would imagine that at department level, there's a bigger process in how you do procurement processes, is how you write something off. You don't just write something off for it to amount to millions. So for me, I think it's unacceptable as a committee for us to accept that this department is constantly having irregular expenditure in the millions, and it's just let go and it's not followed up, and there's not consequence management that is put succinctly that if you deviate from processes, then this is what is going to happen. And I think that we need to be really, really looking into it. And clearly, it's been let go by the management of the department itself. It doesn't seem to be very concerned about it. It doesn't seem to be concerned about the dignity of the department itself. So for me, I am very worried about it. And I think that the department should look closely into the quality. When you walk into the department of on a master's office, you should feel that you're in a master's office. When you walk into a magistrate office, you should feel like you're in a court. So there should be pride attached to it. And I don't feel like there is a lot of pride attached to it. And by coming to Parliament and giving us what you think you want to hear, it doesn't translate, because we've been there and we're hearing so much from the work that is actually happening. And it doesn't, it leaves a very sour taste in our mouths. With those words, Chair, Inkosi Kakhulu.
Thank you very much, Honorable Yako. Honorable Newbold Trochan.
I'm waiting for the host to spotlight me. Thank you very much, Chair. And good morning to everybody on the platform. And thank you to the department for your presentation today. I would like to echo what my colleagues have said. Well done on the slight improvement on your performance. And we'd like to thank all the people who have worked very hard in the department to improve this performance. I would like to start off where my colleague has just left off in relation to the sexual offences courts. I would like to express my disappointment that out of the target of 100 sexual offences courts that were supposed to be set up, none were set up, zero. And as a committee, we worked very hard on those three GBV bills. We made sure that they got to the president in time for assent, and then this target is not even achieved, and there's a backlog of GBV cases, and it's a huge disappointment not only to us but to the women and children who are waiting for justice to be delivered. And you know, there are all these slogans all about the war on women, and you know, and it's not nice as this committee oversizing this department to see these kind of results from the department. So could you please clarify why no courts, or how that target was completely missed? Please give reasons for that. And then out of the 900 million, only 35 million was resolved. So the balance of that has been written off as fraud. Why is it so easy to write something off as fraud? What is being done about the balance? Why can't it be paid back? There's no information about that. And, you know, we know that it will take long to get justice to find out why it's fraud. But what is the department doing currently? And what will the department do to prevent such cases repeating themselves of, you know, having to just continually write off amounts as fraud? You know, there should be some kind of investigation, you know, even before the monies are paid out, or, you know. And then, Chair, the contract, the audiovisual, the contract related to the court recording machines is due to expire in February. We had the problem of the contract was not in place before. So what is the department going to do, seeing as we are 4 months away from February, and how we can avoid the problem that happened earlier this year? On the slide relating to HR, the department has a staff establishment of 23,773. I think I've written that down correctly. You can tell me if I'm incorrect. And the number of people with disabilities is 357. I am not satisfied with that number. Of a figure that is over 23,000, you only have about 300 odd people with disabilities. I really think that departments should do more to appoint people with disabilities. It's really not satisfactory. And the question, well, in relation to this staff establishment, how many are youth? Yes, you have a program related to the youth, but of your entire staff complement, how many of them are in the youth category? And then I just have another question. In relation to my second question about the writing off of those numbers, what is the root cause of this irregular expenditure and how the department will prevent that? And then your relationship with Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, members have repeatedly expressed or shared what they saw during the oversight, their oversight visits. And, you know, it's like a broken record of all the problems with infrastructure. So what is your relationship with Department of Public Works? And is there any sign of improvement in these infrastructure challenges? Thank you very much, Chair. The host can unpin the member. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would also like to say to members, in our program towards the end of next month, we will be having a meeting with both the department and the Department of Public Works on the infrastructure issues. So we will also be ventilating some of these issues before we adjourn for the term. So we are still going to attend some of them. Thank you very much, Honorable Neville Trochan, Honorable Horn, Honorable Horn, because let me start with Honorable Jaylett, because that will be her first bite, and we'll come back to you.
That's fine. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you,
Honorable Jaylett.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, colleagues, and also the DM and the team. Chairperson, you have already indicated that we will. Some of the issues we'll discuss when they come for the meeting that will be scheduled in future. But I want the department at least to go and work or give us some information on how are they going to deal with this issue of the repeat findings by the AG, Chairperson, particularly on the non-compliance with SCM regulations. Because that issue, Chairperson, it has been coming many times. So I don't know exactly what is the problem that the department might be experiencing. Maybe it's something that they can tell us about in details. And then also, I just want to add my voice on the issue of the sexual offence court, Chairperson. The 0%, it is very unacceptable, Chairperson. I think it does not give a good picture, particularly on the issues that were raised earlier by my colleagues. Chairperson, the last one, finding of the AG, they also noted that senior management did not ensure the effective monitoring of the action plan. I would like the DG to also comment on that one, because it is really worrisome if the AG will find something like this, Chairperson. For now, I'll pause, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Jale. Honorable Horn.
Yeah, thanks, Chair, and thanks for the opportunity. Let me just say firstly, the Honorable Breitenbach has sent me a message that despite her having joined on two devices, she's being subjected to huge connectivity issues with sound coming and going. So she sent me her questions and asked that I just add them with your permission.
You should go under a tree, Chair.
Hello?
The Honourable Swart says she's under a tree, she must move.
Yeah.
Bueno, yeah. I'll smack the Honourable Swart very, very soon.
Well, there she is. Maybe she can speak for herself, but let me continue. Chair, the first issue she wanted to, specifically on the issue of maintenance of court infrastructure, the buildings, wanted to say that apart from us having that meeting with DPWI and the department, where we, through our oversight, have of course seen that there's a massive gap there that must be filled and addressed. There's also the fear that the department itself is not properly in the know of the status of all of its court buildings. So the first question is, what plans are there to, on a fairly speedily basis, given what we've now seen happening specifically in Potchefstroom, to make that assessment as to where the state of court buildings are critical and in dire need of urgent intervention. So that's the first question she wanted to ask. The second question is then specifically related to Potchefstroom, where her feedback is that they've now apparently today started work on the building where of course courts had to be evacuated and become dysfunctional on the basis of a roof collapse. But now the feedback is that the work that has commenced is in a section of the building where the court buildings are not situated. And the feeling is, of course, that if one wants to restore the functionality of courts, that doesn't make sense. So I don't know whether they could be given an explanation. And then, Chair, only other issue, which has not been covered by other colleagues, is the issue of the Pretoria Magistrates Court, which were in affected by a fire in 2019. Seemingly the project commenced soon thereafter. It stands at 30% completion. The previous contractor were sort of the relationship were ended on 27 September 2019, so just more than 3 years ago, and despite that, there's still not a new contractor on site. So I don't know whether there is an explanation for that state of paralysis of 3 years in also one of the busiest magistrates' courts in the country. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Nivot Johans, you said you wanted to ask a question. Honorable Nibotrohan?
Chair, she's typed it on the chat, which is that she missed one question, the CARA funding, what is it allocated to?
Okay. Thank you very much, DM. Honorable Jelle, is that a new hand or an old hand?
Yes, Chair. Something I've missed also. I think the last one is about, I heard when the DG was making a presentation, giving some concern around the responses on the issues of CETA and all that. But to me, it reminded me of also of the challenge that we heard about yesterday, if I'm mistaken, it was yesterday with the information regulation, Chair, where they also raised the issue of the department not responding to them, and which resulted to them to not to perform as they would wish. So I think also we must get maybe a comment on that one from the DG chair. Why is it that they are not also, they are doing what the CETA is doing to them, to the information regulation? Thank you, Chair.
Yes. No, I think also we did write a letter to them, because I think the essence of the issue is that with respect to the department and the information regulator, the problem on the side of the information regulator, or the complaint on the side of the information regulator, was that the department is not cooperating, and we wrote them a letter, I think it was early this year or last year. Seemingly they're just dispute of that, because the department, I think in their response through the minister, said that they are cooperating. So it's something that we need to follow up. Has everybody asked his or her questions? Can we have up to 11:15, can we have a break to allow the Deputy Minister, Department, the DG, to process the questions and allocate the questions properly amongst themselves? Can we have a comfort break until 11:15?
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Leader of the delegation, would you want to say something, or I must just proceed to the teacher?
No, I just wanted to respond to one point. The DG and the officials will respond to most of them, but I just wanted to deal with this issue that both Honourable Horn and Honourable Nivot Bhushan raised about the non-designation of the sexual offences courts and what the problem is. So just by way of brief background, not to sort of take too long, there were some sexual offences courts at a regional court level where most of the sexual offences cases are tried, that were there in the 2000s. Minister Khadebe set up a ministerial committee to give advice as to whether these should continue, because in many areas there wasn't great happiness from the presiding officers who found the sexual offences cases exhausting. That was the MATSO, the Ministerial Advisory Team on Sexual Offences. They recommend they continue, and they set out criteria. And after that, the department then set up sexual offences courts in the different courthouses and put that on the website. Parliament had felt, though, that these sexual offences courts should be designated by the minister. And in 2013, Parliament, in a Judicial Matters Amendment Bill, included Section 55A to the Sexual Offences Act. And that was that the minister may, by notice, designate any division of the High Court or the main seat or any local seat of a division or magistrate's court as defined in Section 1 of the Superior Courts Act as a sexual offences court. I'm leaving out the sort of less important bits. And then there were also provisions for the minister to make regulations, 67B, minister to make regulations necessary to give effect to the designation of the courts referred to in Section 55A1, including the requirements for the efficient and effective functioning thereof. So that's what was passed by Parliament. The regulations referred to took some time, because there was extensive consultation with civil society. They set out what the minimum standards that you could expect when you went to a sexual offences courts in terms of infrastructure, in terms of services offered in particular, and in terms of officials present. Those regulations were gazetted on the 7th of February 2020. And that Section 55A came into effect on the 31st of January 2020. Now, in terms of 55A, there had to be consultation with the Chief Justice. That took some time. But the situation we're in currently is that, I mean, has been some debate around should it be courtrooms or courthouses that are designated. Originally, courtrooms were put on the website, but I think the overall consensus from the department side is that it should be places of sitting that are designated. So it would be the Pretoria Magistrates Court, Pretoria Regional Court, for example, in the Pretoria Magistrates Court. The problem is a technical, and basically the department, let me assure members, and I'm sure the officials can speak to it, the department has been extending the sexual offences courts that have the infrastructure. So that is still continuing, and those courts are trying cases. The problem is a legal issue with the designation. The original intention was that the minister would, I think, designate places of sitting. The legal advice, though, from the department was that, no, that can't be done. Because if you look at the definition of a regional court, it is the regional court for the province. So there is a memorandum that is with the minister or his office, which is wanting the minister to designate the 9 regional courts as sexual offences courts. So in other words, there would be 9, which would be starting from the north of the country, Limpopo Regional Court and Mpumalanga Regional Court, etc., each regional court. Now, the problem is that what is envisaged in 55A, which was that it would be specific courts, or at least places of sitting. But the legal advice is that can't be done. So the issue is being looked at. It's a question of should the definition of regional court, which was referred to in Section 55A, which was a reference to the Magistrates Court Act, should that not be changed to ensure that places of sitting can be designated, because the regulations are what you can expect when you get into a sexual offences court. And the fear would be is if you go to a particular regional court in a province and it doesn't have the facilities, then you'd legitimately be able to say that this is what these regulations said. So to chair and honourable members, if this issue of the non-designation is a legal issue. That is not stopping the work being done. So although it's 0 that are designated, I mean, currently, as I said, you can have 6 that are that are designated, the 9 regional courts, but I'm not sure how that is going to help matters. But the work in terms of ensuring that courthouses, places of sittings, have courtrooms that are equipped, that is continuing. And the officials, I can think, can give more detail on the numbers of how many it actually is. It's just the formal legal designation is running into a problem with the definition of a regional court. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. DJ?
Thank you very much, Chair. I will start with, maybe just ask my colleague, Advocate Chris Campbell, to make some addition on the point that the DM was responding to now, and deal with the related questions that have been asked by honourable members on this sexual offences matters. Advocate Kambule is not joining with us here, but I must advise she's online. If you can take this question, please.
Thank you, Gigi. Honourable Chair, as a DM has already articulated and also informed the committee of the memo that is before the minister. It is a memo that is actually aligned to the wording of Section 55 capital A, which actually empowers the minister to designate courts where the sexual offences courts must be established. So what it means is that Section 55 capital A does not really require the sexual offences courts to be designated. but the places where they are established must be designated. As DM has said, that this is a highly debatable issue, and the department is handling it. But I would like just to leave the committee with just as a takeaway that there is not a single court that is not dealing with sexual offences courts. I mean, sexual offences matters. In terms of Section 55, capital A, subsection 5, empowers the courts that have the jurisdiction to hear these matters, to continue hearing them. So in the country, 299 courts are hearing sexual offences matters. So people are receiving the services that they are expecting. And I would also like to say that the Matso courts that a DM also referred to are still continuing to hear these matters and are providing the package of support services that the regulations are requiring us to provide. And in 2020, as DM has already indicated, that the regulations were approved on the 7th of February 2020. And the department did not, despite the fact that it was, you know, at the time that the COVID-19 was starting and there were hard lockdowns, we did not stop. We continued working on the implementation of Section 55, capital A. We established a trust team that had the representation of the judiciary, a South African legal aid, South Africa, prosecution, and the civil society to put together the national guidelines that will navigate the different stakeholders as to how to establish sexual offences courts, and particularly to provide the services that they are required in terms of the regulations. Because this is a collective endeavour. It's not only the responsibility of the department to ensure the running of this sexual offences court. So we did that, and the minister approved the guidelines. The problem now started when we were doing the designation, and I wouldn't like to get to what a DM has already apprised the committee of. It's a matter that we are working on. And now, last year, it is not as if the department did not do anything. Whilst we wrote letters to the Chief Justice to request, as DM has said, that subsection 2 of that provision requires a process of consultation that starts with the Chief Justice, and the Chief Justice must go to the JPs, and the JPs must go to the regional court president. That's a very tedious process, but we envisaged a level of delay, and we started then to engage with the regional court presidents and involve them in the process of developing the national guidelines so as to ensure that there's proper consultation that happens at that level. And we have a checklist that also requires the provincial head before signing the resource compliance of that court to consult with the regional court president. So we had that consensus then with the regional court president's forum. The problem then it was us then getting the letter of concurrence, because it says that provision that the minister must designate these courts in consultation with the Chief Justice. As I have said, that it's that process that the committee approved. And it's a matter that I would say that maybe the committee will need to reconsider that process, because it's quite a long process. But we got the letter of concurrence, and we got it a day before the end of the financial year. That was on the 30th of March. So it was already late for us then to do the designation. But I would like to say that we did not rest during that process. We ensured that the courts are aligned to the specifications of the regulation. So right now, as I speak, we do have 83 courts that are aligned to the regulations that are ready then to be established, not to be designated, but to be established as sexual offences court at the places that have been designated. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, teacher.
Ask the colleagues, I'll cover some of the issues later, but I'll ask the colleagues, I'll start with the Chief Master to handle the issues that have been raised around the master space, including specifically the situation in Toriyando. Chief Master.
Thanks, PG, and good day to Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, and the Deputy Minister. The question that was raised by Honourable Swart related to aspect and one of the workers.
Can you raise your voice? Can you raise your voice?
Well, Chair, is it better now?
Yes, it is.
Thanks. I was saying the questions that related to the infrastructure of the offices in Tata and Toriyando is the question that was also touched on by Honourable Iago on the look and feel of the structures or offices of the buildings that we are utilising. Now, the first question was more of a general statement that related to, or a general comment that related to the general delays that are spoken about in relation to the services in the masters, and linked to that is therefore in an attempt to address those delays. What is it that we are doing and where actually are we with the delays? Now, the backlog, we had in this current year indicated that our desire is to ensure that at least by the end of December we would have dealt with all the backlogs. But part of it is that we have indicated that we are having some risks which may hamper or inhibit achieving this desire to ensure that the determined backlog is finalized at the end of December. We did highlight the risks being one, load shedding. The other one was a challenge on our stability of our IT. We understand that the internally there is a challenge and there is attempts made, one, to capacitate the branch, two, to even procure and get systems that will ensure that we have a better infrastructure so that then we can serve much better. So the actual number are the following: that as at the end of September 2022, we had managed to do 421 of the backlogs out of the determined number of 9856, which is translating to a 4.27%. So largely we had seen in the department, and we had been reporting it to the office of the DG, to the head of IT, that there were many challenges that they were trying to migrate and acquire new space in the new data center, that there were huge challenges on our infrastructure network. And as a result, many a times our services were not actually available, and our planned strategy to do overtime to attack that backlog was restricted by these two risk factors. the look and feel of the office of Tower, though, even prior to the portfolio committee delegation going to this office, I have been to that office around November 2021. I felt it is unfair to serve at such a structure and under those conditions, and even where a part of the office had been in 2015, it can't stand like that forever. We have embarked on a process to refurbish that office. I was informed that as at the end of September, in the first week of October, the office has been completed. I have planned in my monthly plan to go and look and see for myself the situation on around the 23rd of October. So I believe we are trying to turn the situation around. Our problem with the building in Tata is similarly to the nature of the building in Peter Marisberg Master's Office, a heritage building. And as a result, the challenges we have to effect any correction or change or repair is so difficult, the process. I think the colleagues in our facilities which better articulate the process that is undertaken in trying to relocate the master's office in Mthatha so that they be out of that building. It isn't a building that will resonate with the leaders in management would say that we are, ladies and gentlemen, spending, ladies and gentlemen, people don't feel like they are coming to such an office that we want to get to such a situation. And lastly, maybe as I go to the end in addressing these questions, Chair, I had noticed the comment and the question that you would have wanted or posed to the Minister when he was making the overview statement in relation to what is covered in the AG's report on slides. 16, particularly where the AG wanted to say that the reliability of our report, and particularly dealing with two aspects. One, at slide 14, he was dealing with the usefulness of the report, but he then says in the conclusion, concluding remark that is in reddish, he said the DOJ and CD audit findings raised on the usefulness and reliability do not directly impact service delivery. That's what the Auditor General says. And I think on the usefulness, the process that we took in the audit engagement would clearly reflect that there would have been better understanding had we had time to engage more with the Auditor General. However, on the last aspect that slide 16 of the Auditor General's report, where she deals with the aspect of the indicators that are more focused on the finalization of the work done and coming to a conclusion that wants to say in one way or the other, this may be amounting to a distortion. I think the comment and the remark is not in a proper context, and it should have perhaps been preceded by an engagement so that one can understand the following. That when we craft these indicators that are saying percentages of finalized matters during a particular period, we are giving...
Chief Master, which question are you answering now?
Chair, I was specifically relating to the comment that you have made in the conclusion of the overview by the Minister. I thought the biggest part of the official that had listened, well, I should cover it, but I may give it the chance of the
I think the DG will cover it.
I think,
are you done now?
Thanks, I'm covered. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I'll ask the colleagues in finance, the acting CFO, to deal with the specific finance matters that have been raised by the honourable members in relation to the qualification root causes as well as the write-off processes.
Thank you. Mr. Trevor would like to respond.
And thank you, Chairman, Chair, and committee members. And with regards to the matter relating to irregular expenditure, I firstly wish to clarify, I think it was a question raised by Member Hunt, that the irregular expenditure was not relating to an exemption, but an award for the security guarding services contract. So the 863 million irregularity was caused by the fact that as part of the mandatory requirements of the tender back then in 2016, we wanted this company to submit UIF certificates, valid UIF certificates, which they did. And this contract is our was vetted internally by internal auditor as well as national treasurer. And we were given an appeal given to award to these companies. However, when AG audited, it was found that the submitted UIF certificates were in fact fraudulent. And the investigation that started internally by our forensic investigators, which they did confirm that indeed the certificates were indeed fraudulent. We also engaged the department with the Department of Labor to establish whether indeed the certificates were indeed submitted from the environment or not. As far as the Department of Labor came back to say, they cannot confirm whether the certificates were invited, the way spent by that department or not. Because when you look at the certificates, they had the authentic Department of Labor stamp, they were in the Department of Labor later ahead. But the discussion then carried on. When we then decided fraud indeed the case of the could be potential for fraud, the matter was reported to the House. So the investigations were going on concurrently. This relates to a contract that expired in 2021 January. So it is a contract that expired then. So we were only able to conclude our investigations because we had to wait for reports from the Hawks regarding the outcome of the investigation to indeed also received. We also were waiting for a response because we also wrote to the Department of Labor to establish whether the Department of Labor did their own internal investigation so that we can then include all those factors when we also are concluding our own, you know, investigation internal department. Then the Department of Labor also came back to us on the last year to say no, they did not conduct any internal investigation because there was no evidence to prove that the certificate was issued internally or not. Now, why we are saying this is not the regular expenditure? Because there was no a finding that proved that the department did anything wrong. The award was based on the documents that were before the department and concluded the process, and all the documents that were before the department in the point to all these contracts having fully complied with the mandatory requirements. There was an informal consultation with the Office of the CPO in this regard, Chairperson, and there was some level of agreement with the department's view with the Office of the CPO to say indeed the department did not do anything. All the documents that were expected submitted by the Chief Commissioner were indeed submitted. Now, the fact that we had already agreed and accepted the department that this was the record expenditure, we then felt it important that we must then also write back to the Secretary to say these are the latest realizations regarding this matter. And this is a matter of fraud. There's nothing that points to the department having done anything. And even back then, there were no systems that were available to help the department on the state, the validity of the documents that have been submitted by the service providers. So we have written to the Department of to the city of Treasury to then say, this is our view, this is the case of fraud, not the regular expenditure, and we are awaiting their concurrence in this regard. So this relates to the security contract amount of $3 million that has been, you know, affected as a regular expenditure. Currently, we have systems in place now that are enabling the department to validate the honesty of the certificates that would have been submitted by the security companies. And before any award, we have a control in place now that says just to check the validity of the certificates so that we make sure that the documents that have been given to us are indeed valid, and I think the system now is working perfectly. So we are not writing it off, but the government is removing this matter from it being deemed to be a serious expenditure, but to be just a case of fraud, but indeed the case of fraud was indeed opened with the law enforcement agency here, which is the boss. Now, I wanted also to confirm that the 900 million irregular expenditure that was reported in the year under this review mostly relates to historic cases. The only new irregular expenditure that was incurred from the procurement processes in the year under review would relate to the state attending procurement, the 32 million, which I think the DG covered some of the facts why we are struggling, because we are still waiting the staff desire to come back to the department regarding the framework that we want to follow as a department in dealing with the procurement and the state attending procurement. DG nicely provide context why we have this challenge. I want also to indicate to the committee that when you look at the DG report for the year under review, there were no significant findings that related to ethical processes. And there were zero findings that related to procurement processes, meaning the awards that were made in the previous financial year, which means that I think the department's controls are beginning to be more effective around the space, and it's a matter of that, then managing these controls so that at least we maintain the momentum. The one case that I want to talk to also relating to the regular expenditure was that one of the offered damage, which I indeed was a irregular expenditure case, which the department did everything is good to make sure that this matter indeed is not, does not become irregular, but we will not receive a good cooperation from the administration. However, Chair, what is interesting is that when the administration was approached again to say, can you help the department to go back to the service provider who's currently providing the services, because of the magnitude of the fines that the Metrofund is having, Treasury agreed now to say we do allow the department to go back to Metrofund to use them to still provide the services, which means that their basis for not agreeing for this partner to go back to Metrofund to procure the services back then, and we approach them to avoid this contract to become irregular. It means that their basis for not agreeing were basically not incorrect from on the onset when we first approached them. So the amount involved there is just about 2.7 million, which is part of the debt expenditure that has been reported. Now, I think it was Member Horn, if I'm not mistaken, who spoke to the 84 million. He wanted us to confirm whether the legislative development had spent his budget last year by 84 million. And the figure is not correct. The underspending incurred by the specific development in the previous financial year was only 28 million. I think those are the aspects that I wanted to cover that some of the questions were raised.
Thank you. Thank
you, Gigi. I think to add on that, in terms of repeat audit findings, what we identified was that the challenge that we had was that when looking at the audit action trends and seeing the trends versus the findings, we were not really looking at root causes. And there was also the issue of properly monitoring whether or not we are implementing those audit action trends. And this is what we are strengthening now in the new year and in the current year, to then say what really were the root causes that caused those findings in order for us to be able to address them and prevent them from becoming specific findings, also properly monitoring the implementation thereof together with internal audit. Because it's not enough just to say I've implemented, we also need to look at the POE that then addresses the fact that we say we have implemented. So those are the two areas in terms of dealing with the repeat findings, which we are strengthening, looking at the audit report of the previous financial year to look at the root causes and also ensure that there's proper monitoring of the action plan itself. And you see, I think those address the cases. But in terms of the SIU, DG, the balance that we have owing for SIU is 70 million. So I am not ascertain it to the 300 million where it comes from, but from our consultation with the SIU, the balance owing is 70 million.
I do want also to add,
DG, on the SIU, that's what we also picked up. There was a meeting in late May, early June, between the two of the folks from FIU and our department. And what we found was that the entry of the FIU invoices was also the problem, that they don't come through the office of the CFO. And I think in that meeting, it was agreed that the CFO from the FIU will also ensure that once the SIU is ready to invoice us, all those invoices would be submitted directly to the CFO so that the CFO can then be able to forward them to relevant units. And in that case, it empowers the CFO to then make sure that we monitor and ensure that those invoices are paid within 30 days. But some of the invoices that were submitted, we have been able to pay them. And indeed, 300 million that has been mentioned, we were able to even show the CFO estimating that it's also related to some of the payments that the department had already we have already made as a department, but then somehow from their systems they were not able to detect. Thank you.
Just on that matter, I'll meet with Advocate Mutiva to finalize this, but the impression I've gotten from my last interaction with him was that we were making significant progress in terms of payment. But Chair and honorable members of the committee, the SIU is also not cheap. It comes highly, you know, the rates are highly market competitive. You will remember in 2020, the minister ordered an investigation into the offices of the masters. We have been battling the past 6 months to say to the SIU, it can't be that more than 24 months we don't have the final. The state attorney's investigation as well was not just started 2 years ago, it was started some years ago, and we've been pleading that you know, as we make the payment, there must be reciprocity in terms of the conclusion of the investigation. If we have an open-ended investigation, it is just not helping us. We come back here, you will ask us what consequence management are we, or what measures are we putting in place to address the bid or whatever the corruption is, Data Team or Masters. So there's been that dynamic interaction between us and them and bidding. At some point in July, we thought that maybe they don't have anything further to do on the Masters. And because the problem the race as well depends on them continuing. And if we're no longer getting reports that seem to be assisting us, we felt that it would have been better if we just concluded those investigations. But I'm sure next time they come back, they will place us among those who are on us on. Because indeed, we never want to be a part of those that are on the roll of dishonor in terms of not paying the SIU. We should be the last department to be found not to be paying the SIU. I'll ask the colleague to deal with the manager to deal with matters around infrastructure, HR, as well as the modernization program, the ICT challenges that have been identified with the help of Mr. Sakas.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, DG, and good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. I will start with the question that was relating to.
Maybe, DJ, before she proceeds, I think there was an issue about understanding in the state, the people who are the legal drafters. So your issue is that it was not 70 million, it's 28 million. I think the last speaker...
I'll deal with that. I think the issue was... It's 84 million for the program, which is program 3, but in the legislative drafting, it's 28 million, but I'll speak to that 28 million and the issue that Honorable Swap has raised about capacity building.
Okay. No, that's
fine. I'll deal with that.
Sure. No, then she can proceed.
Thank you, Chair. The question that was raised by Honorable Horn on the AVR target that is no longer visible on the APP. In response to that, Chair, we have initially planned to have 60 AVR sites rolled out. We have already rolled out 18 sites, and the remaining 42 sites were not rolled out because we have included them in the new project called Court Audiovisual System, which is under procurement via CETA currently. In terms of the unplanned maintenance of buildings, where Honorable Board indicated that there seems to be no plan in terms of maintenance of our buildings, the response to that, Chair, is that we have a three-year maintenance plan that is developed in terms of our UAM, our User Asset Management plan. And this maintenance plan gets funded and executed by DPWI on our behalf. And this is as per the YAMA Act that we always refer to. So the projects get scheduled and they get prioritized according to their position assessment that is being conducted. Unfortunately, we had a meeting with the FDG of DPW during our strategic session this week, and he actually explained in terms of the ranking of the conditions of the properties, how they do that. So through different forums, our ministerial meetings, minister to minister meetings, DG to DG meetings, and joint task meetings that are chaired by myself and the DDG and DPWI, we provide progress reports on each asset in terms of what has been prioritized for maintenance. Chair, the department is, so the UAM is basically a 5-year program. So we are now due to receive a new one for the 2022-2023 that will be valid for the next financial year, 5 years. And we also have received devolution of powers and increased threshold in terms of the implementation of our minor capital work for day-to-day maintenance from 100,000 per incident to 1 million rand per incident for all our general building work. So we will be utilizing that, amongst others, to make sure that our buildings are maintained. For the four costs, that we have identified as big costs, we through the Department of Public Works, there is a process that is being put in place to ensure that there is a total facilities management program for those four costs. Now, in terms of the CRT machine contract that is ending in February, and what are the plans that we have? We will be issuing an RFI, like the DG has said. We have just noticed that the current system is actually outdated. So we will need to go out in the market to test the market in terms of the latest technology that is in there and that is cost-effective. But currently, so that we do not have a lapse of a contract that has lapsed and we don't have anything in place, we are currently going through a procurement process via CETA to procure for the new contract, at least for 24 months, that will keep the lights on so that within that 24 months, we could have then found the latest technology that is out there in the market to deploy. In terms of the...
So what are you actually saying? Seemingly there are two processes. You have issued an RFI, you want to test the market, and then you want to use CETA to procure the other devices. So which means are you extending the current contract for 24 months whilst you are testing the market?
No, we are not extending the current contract. We are appointing a new contractor. We are procuring a new service for the 24 months because the current contract was only procured for 12 months. So once it expires in February, then we should be having a new contract in place. But while we have the new contract in place, that's why we have a reduced period of 24 months. So that in that 24 months, we would have explored opportunities that are out there that can be able to replace the current one, the 24 months one at the later stage.
But which means it is likely that when within these 24 months, it is possible that you might procure machines that might need to be replaced because after the 24 months, you might have a new technology. So for now, you will be procuring possibly the current technology, which might need to be replaced quite soon because you are still looking for a new technology. Will that not be expensive?
The 24 months will be for maintenance and support of the current technology.
Of the current technology.
Yeah, I think, Chair, the question we're asking as well is linked to what Honourable Vollett asked us and say, will we do everything to make sure that come February we have maintenance? And media must make this point that because of the CETA Act, we have to publish the bid for maintenance of the current system through CETA. And a submission was made to CETA from March, when we realized that then we have 12 months, the current contractor team is assisting. We then started working, and I think in July we approached CETA. And there's a challenge, they were not making progress. And we had earlier returned to the minister because the act says only the minister for communications can give an exemption. They give us an exemption because the current transversal that CETA has is problematic. It was set up in 2014 and it has expired now. It's existing on a month-to-month basis and Treasury itself said they are very concerned about it there are new players in the market that are not covered in that contract. But the challenge that we're going to have, if you indeed look at what Honorable Horn was saying, which is 5 months to February now, whether are we going to be done with everything? If Peter doesn't come back, we're going to write another letter now and return to the MCO, the CEO of CETA, raising the same concern. We're trying to meet with them. But the reality is that, and this is the point that generally on our ICT and modernization on matters that Honorable Yako has raised, that, and we're not using this as an excuse. CETA is a serious constraint. Yesterday, Honorable Nibon Drachen was making a proposal that maybe that we must come together with DPWI to appear before this committee. My suggestion would be, over and above the DPWI, we need to appear here with CETA. Because CETA is a serious constraint. And then we see that created out of the act passed by this parliament. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you, DG. The issue of the leap in Limpopo, in Polokwane High Court, the OEM has been engaged and is on site. All the Block B leaps are working, and also the Block A5 leaps are working. The only leaps that are not working as yet are the Block A2, which the OEM is currently attending to. Now, the facility, the Toyando facility, I'll come to the Toyando facility and the Umtata question.
Sorry. I think the view was that we are still going to deal with the issues relating to infrastructure before the end of the term, where we would be meeting with the two ministers and yourselves. So we are going to go into much detail about what we have found in all the provinces that we have visited. I think those reports would be great. It would be of great assistance in that meeting. I would ask that we don't go into deeper infrastructural answers for now. We will deal with them later.
No, thank you very much. Chair, on the issue of the records, yes, indeed, the records, the finding in the master in Toyando, as indicated, is not in good condition. We have now currently, after what Mr. Kemun has explained in terms of the irregular contract of Metrofund, we have now appointed a new contract that will assist us with the oxide storage facility to keep all those funds that are sitting in the masters in the region into an oxide storage, but not only just to put them in an oxide storage, but to also scan and archive and assist in ensuring that we digitalize those records and at the end. Honorable Nibos Duncan also raised a question regarding the employees, the number of employees who are living with disabilities. Yes, out of the 357 employees that are living with disabilities, we have about 51 of those that are youth in that category. But Chair, also just to mention that yes, we have noticed that in terms of the GPSA, the target that we were supposed to reach in terms of the overall disability target in the department is 2%. But as a department, we were also dissatisfied with the 2%. Hence, in our IPP, we have increased it to 2.1%. So that is the target that we have. In terms of, I'm not going to deal with the infrastructure question. The issue of the SG contract that has been vacant for too long, Chair, we have finally, let me start by saying that due to the fact that the evaluation system in the DPSA was no longer there, we then had to finalize the evaluation through a benchmark, and we have now submitted a report to the minister for approval of that evaluation report. And once it's approved, then the contract will then be advertised. In terms of the four heads of offices in the state attorneys, the same reason is the reason that has actually delayed us in finalizing the evaluation. But we have since then finalized the evaluation of those offices, and they will be going out on advert or as soon. I think I have covered, because most of your questions, Chair, were relating to the infrastructure facilities. So I've covered all the questions that were raised. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I take the point that we'll not go into greater details on the infrastructure issue, but there were basic issues about the general relationship with public works. As you will know, the previous years, the public works had delegated us 100,000 per incident for maintenance. Mm-hmm. And we made a request that amount be increased. Finally, on Monday, we got a final letter confirming that we can increase maintenance on a day-to-day maintenance to 1 million rands. And I subsequently delegated that amount to the provincial heads and the court managers, as well as area court managers. And we think that is going to assist us in dealing with just the general management that is lower than 1 million. Though there are conditionalities that are placed for us in terms of technical capacity, engineers, and so on and so forth, but we are continuing the engagement. The challenge is that over the past 3 years, there has not been a director general in DPWI. I've dealt with three acting directors general. Even the current one is acting, but the plans and the vision that he has, if he can only just continue to be in that position for the next 12 to 24 months, it does look like we can make a significant progress. I know Honorable Breitenbach has raised the issue of Pretoria, which I think remains a critical, a serious embarrassment that here in the capital, where the magistrate court is big as Pretoria, and it was burnt down in 2010, more than 10 years down the line, the conditions there that the officials work in are very deplorable. But we engaged up DPWI, they tell us there's a matter between them and Treasury. At some point we said, can't we go to cabinet then to have this matter resolved? That there's a contractor was supposed to come back. I was given an assurance that by October the contractor will now be back on site, but I'm not sure if they're back on site. So it continues to be really a serious issue of concern. But the political leadership in the department and both in DPWI are working very hard, and I think with what we got now, the 1 million, it does look like it might well be the beginning of things changing, and the rest of the other issues as well. They explain their constraints, even in terms of acquisition of land. You have land in rural areas where traditional leaders are always saying, we can give you this land to construct a new court, to move from the shack where you are. But then you have an issue about what is called site clearance, which takes forever. You look at the number of appointed surveyors that they have. It's not enough. The ratio we told by the director general 2 days ago, that one quantity surveyor has a ratio of about 80-something cases, when in fact, in the private sector, one quantity surveyor deals with 5 cases. But over and above that, then you get into local government, municipal councils that must play a role in that respect, and they are not assisting. So as a result, it is a very, very difficult situation that we're dealing with. But we're losing a number of issues. We agreed now with the Director General that we must also look at deployment of alternative building technology, where we don't necessarily wait for bricks and mortar, which takes a long time, but we can deploy what can be put in place in a space of 6 to 12 months, and in that respect, improve access to justice. And I think there was a question that Honorable Swart raised about the Minister making reference to 146 billion of contingent liability. I think that was relating to the entire state in terms of not necessarily the department. So you have the contingent liability for the state and also have the contingent liability for the department. And in terms of the policies that the Office of the Solicitor General has developed and are going to cabinet, that's part of what the policies and the strategies seek to manage, so that in the short and immediate term, we reduce that number to a manageable number. And further, I think Honorable Swart raised the issue around our overdraft facility. Yes, I think those are the options we're looking at, and this one of deposit as well. I think we accept the proposal. That's one of the issues that we're looking at that at the beginning of the financial year, departments that know that they will require legal services, the Treasury can assist us to either expense the legal budget so that those who don't budget for legal services, then yet they engage themselves or they want to engage in legal services, they know that such services will not be available. I promised to deal with the 28 million under expenditure under legislative development.
But before you go there, I think we will do whatever we can on our side, but don't you think that it will also be proper for the minister to take a proposal to cabinet around this issue of non-payment by departments and other organs of state? Because the president also does meet with all cabinet ministers, and through PICC meets with premiers and executive mayors. So we'll do whatever we can on our side, but I think the executive must also play its part.
We accept that, Chair. I think we'll do that, including releasing a list which will appear to be a name and shame kind of a list.
Yeah.
Because it will even surprise you that some of the departments are in the top 10 of non-paying departments. And the same way you will not have expected us not to pay, as like you will be shocked who else is not paying for legal fees. I think we take that point and we'll do that. Now, the legislative development, I think there was a lot of expectations that was built particularly on legislative drafting over many years. But in the recent past, we have had challenges of attrition, retirement, and death, and that's why there are capacity challenges. So, and we had a challenge of the occupation-specific dispensation, so we are converting those, and in the next coming 6 months, we will be doing a lot of work to improve capacity there, as well as trying to recruit young state law advisors who can then be taken through with the DDG, the team that are currently doing a great job of transfer of skills and building a capacity, because the capacity that we operated on until now has been a capacity that was built over many years. So we need to replenish and rebuild that capacity so that we continue to maintain the highest standards of legislative drafting that the department is known for. The issue around the reduction of targets, yes, we had come earlier in the year and you did admonish us to go back, and we did go and address those issues that you had identified for the current year, and we brought them back. And in the main, most of those were the transformational targets and indicators that seek to turn around the department. So we brought them back and still guided by the five-year priorities that we hope to achieve by end of March 2024. The consequence management issue that Honorable Masego Jele has raised, the Auditor General specifically was referring to three cases that date back, one of it, to 2010, 2016, and 2018. But what we are doing to deal with these matters, particularly emanating from the year under review, is to strengthen our labor relations unit, but also our legal unit, so that whenever there are issues that are raised of non-compliance, we immediately act on it. We saw that particularly for the year under review, Auditor General picked up issues about where we awarded and this was an involvement of public servants. Now, the involvement of public servants now in violation of the act that prohibits public servants doing business with the state. Some of it is mainly not necessarily officials from the department, but from other departments, and we are following on those, and we commit to really strengthen our system and measures for dealing with the consequence management. And similar to that, I think when I would generate the issue about what did the general say, we were not strong in monitoring. Towards the end of the year under review, we have increased our capacity with all the chief directors now. And part of it, Auditor General, noted the fact that we, the entire year, we didn't have a CFO, and now we do. And also in terms of our audit turnaround plan, we'll be looking at those issues we have raised around repeat findings. So our audit turnaround plan, which at some point when we come for any update, we can share with you, we are specifically prioritizing dealing with repeat findings. And the CFO is coordinating a committee of colleagues at the DDG level that looks at the rapid and implementation of the audit turnaround. And we're convinced that with the measures that we have, we surely should be able to get to a point where end of the year we are not qualified. Information regulator, I think we will deal with that. We will deal with the issues they are raising. But the challenge is that for the record, I think maybe they are quick to come and complain here to us than to engage with us. Because you will recall that as they were set up, the department has been assisting. Now I get a sense that they have the capacity. They have appointed a CFO, but there was a CFO who left. There was a CEO who left. Now they have a new CEO, they have a new CFO. I think it would be good. I received a letter from the new CEO sometime last week requesting that we delegate them. We relinquish all the delegations that we've been asked to speak them. And we have no reason to hang on to those delegations. As a matter of fact, it will be a relief. So by next week, we should be able to meet them and delegate all the responsibilities so that they can take full accountability. And by saying so, we are not saying we will not continue to assist. We'll continue to make ourselves available to assist the information regulator, but it's regrettable that it got to this point where they felt that they could not achieve their objectives because of the department. The intention of the department has been to assist them and do all that is possible to deal with all the challenges they are facing. I'll ask my colleague, Mr. Ntemsa, to speak on the
No, DJ, I think let me contextualize it. I think there are two issues. One is the ransomware attack, where as the information regulator, they've been requesting you to account. That is where the complaint about not getting cooperation comes from. Then there is a frustration of listing, which has got nothing to do with you per se. It has got something to do with National Treasury. That because they are, in terms of the law, they are independent, they want to get that listing from National Treasury, and that has not been forthcoming. As a result, they are forced to be an extension of the department, which sometimes they have to oversight. But the biggest bone of contention is, according to them, is how you have in responding to the ransomware attack.
Yeah. Just on the ransomware attack, I think we have records to prove that every time they ask us for information, we have responded and provided information. It may well be that maybe they are not satisfied with the information, but the part that I think there should be an acknowledgement is that really the ransomware attack against the Department of Justice and Consumer Development is a test case for them. They don't necessarily have a point of reference to another government department of the same size and the same magnitude of what we went through. So there are a lot of mistakes we ourselves made as we're trying to comply with the Act, because it was a first major experience, and we are mindful of the fact that whatever that we're going to do together will go a long way in helping government in broad terms and other government departments. For example, there will be a question that says, do you know who caused this or who hacked you? And it may well be that it appears like we are not forthright when we say we don't know. But the matter is also with the police and the Hawks. And up to so far, we have not yet received an update. But maybe because we're in Parliament, it's also, I think the realization or the general accepted that his government, not let alone the Department of Justice, were serious challenges around cyberspace governance and that will include your general cybersecurity and all that. So when you have a situation with one government department, it may come across as if the department is not cooperating, when in fact, it's just if you do a general audit of the state of cyberspace governance and related matters in the state, we must admit, at least from where we're sitting, objectively and subjectively, that there are challenges. But we will continue to engage with them in the specific matters because we need their help. We will ask them to assist that. I thought we can give the last question, my colleagues, on the cover funding. I think there was a question. I think it's Honorable Nasebo Jelle that had asked the issue around cover funding.
It's Honorable Nibot Kohan. It was Honorable Nibot Kohan.
Yes, thank you.
My apologies, DJ. I think Chair will be the question, so I'm afraid tonight, maybe just to remind us the question so that we can then be able to respond.
Yes, the allocation. I'm sure even court services can assist. Who are they allocated to the CARA fund? Oh, okay.
Maybe DG, we do not have all the details. The same board is going to answer DG. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. On the CARA fund, we have about 580 million. Currently in the CARA fund. In terms of the allocations, 100 million was allocated to NPA to assist with the prosecution of the cases, 11 million NPA for training of Specialized Commission of Crime Unit and Interest Protection, 12 million to Department of Justice for the development of the integrated criminal justice strategy, 12 million also the Department of Justice for the appointment of foreign language interpreters, 13 million for biometric systems at port of entry allocated to the Department of Home Affairs, also 10 million allocated to Home Affairs for case management systems. We also have 19 million to Home Affairs for equipment at the refugee reception centers, 28 million also to Home Affairs for implementation of the judgment of the Constitutional Court, 50 million for the Financial Intelligence Center to enhance its reporting, intelligence, governing and compliance processes, 23 million for the anti-corruption strategy communication activities allocated to GCIS, 8.2 million for the National Anti-Corruption Strategy for South Africa, 5.8 million
for ethics training of government officials through DPSA. I think that can be submitted in writing. I think Honorable Nivot Tohans wanted to get a sense. I think we do have a sense, but I think you can supplement it by submitting the whole thing in writing to the committee.
Thanks, Chair. We'll do that. Just the point that I think we can admit. Due to COVID and other related matters, I think we've just generally not, as department, not been doing well with the expenditure. But we'll be meeting as Director General of the current legislature to just do a review so that even as we submit, we can give you a sense of the expenditure of the allocation. So thank you very much, Chair. And I think we generally, just a general comment for me, take a note of the comments, as we always do, and they help us to go back and refine in terms of either how we draft our indicators, but over and above that, how we try our best to implement as we look at the targets. MTSF is coming up in 18 months, so that when we come back here, giving you that analogy, we are committed that this year, Chair, we're not playing to be the trophy. We're challenging for championship. We know the challenges, but we are convinced that when we come back here, we'll tell you that we have won the championship.
Okay. No, thank you very much. Deputy Minister, your closing remarks. Oh, sorry, Deputy Minister, yes. before your Honourable Nivo Trochan.
Chairperson, if I may, just one question before the Deputy Minister. To Advocate Praise, my question is to Advocate Praise. Thank you very much for your response with regard to the delegation to the regional courts and, you know, the fact that you're still awaiting on that. But I wanted to say the department's report in the current year with regard to the implementation of the criminal law, sexual offences and related matters, Amendment Act, on page 60, it says that for the current year, you have 13,078 new cases of sexual offences captured at the district courts. So 13,000 and only 4,000 went on to the regional courts, which means about 9,000 is left that's still there in the district courts. So I'm assuming it's still outstanding. And the previous years, the outstanding matters, are those the matters, I'm not sure if it's outstanding matters from previous years carried over or, you know, what's the case. So that is why the concern was raised. And I do understand that the courts, all courts deal with sexual offences, but the outstanding cases is a very high number when only 4,000 reach the regional courts. And I think I would like to get an answer about that, but it can also be in writing too. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Nibot Trochan. I'm not sure whether it's the DG or the Deputy Minister would like to answer that.
Can the host unpin Honourable Woman?
Chair, so you wanted me to speak or?
No, before your closing remarks, if the Honourable Belma's question can be answered either by the DG or the other officials.
I'll ask that for Kit Kamule, if she's still online, come see her or Ms. Belma, Mr. Malema to respond.
Yeah, this is DG. We note the concern and I think we'll look at the next and then provide the report as best opportunity just to look at you know, why do we have so many hospital increases. So Jay, we'll accept the offer that we can provide the report in writing. Thank you.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Mr. Malema. Deputy Minister.
Chair, thanks. Maybe just on that last question. I do think it's an issue that the portfolio committee should also be looking at. I mean, the department, as it said, will respond in writing. My fear, Honourable Nivo Drushan, is that those cases aren't still sitting with the district court. They were withdrawn because the number of withdrawals is quite high, so that they're no longer there. What I can say is that, you know, in Umlazi, in Ekekwini municipality, we used to have two sexual offences courtrooms. They reduced that to, and now Umlazi has a high number of sexual offences reported. So this is the regional court of sexual offences reported at the police station. So they used to have two sexual offences courts. That got then reduced to one because the regional magistrates basically said there were not enough cases. I'm now told that Umlazi has combined with Umbumbulu, which is about 50 kilometres, maybe not as much, up the road towards the interior. And that they now have a combined role for sexual offences. In other words, it's less and less. So I do think it's something that needs to be looked at. You would have noticed that you have had the, in terms of the Criminal Law Sexual Offences Act, there has to be an annual report on the implementation of that act. And similarly with the Child Justice Act, you've had those reports tabled. I would urge you to try and find the time as the Portfolio Committee to, will definitely read them, but also to interrogate them, because it's no use looking at doing more. It's also looking at what you've done. How is that working? I can't remember if the point was made. Just the Sexual Offences, Criminal Law Sexual Offences Act, and the criminal matters and related matters are in effect. The domestic violence is about to come into effect. So that's the status of those. So it's not as if they're sitting. Look, I think that, this is primarily the department's accounting to Parliament as, and your interrogation of the annual report. So it's really for the DG and the officials. I do have to say I am similarly worried with the some of the comments that the members have made, in that if you look at the reports, they're positive. Things are going well, being done, but when you go to the ground, it's a different picture. And I think I would want to emphasize that your oversight visits, your visits to areas are very important. So I think the committee has a very key role to play in improving the delivery of justice in South Africa. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. TJ, anything to say?
Thank you very much. Just to express our deepest gratitude to you and the members of the committee for the constructive criticism that you always give us, and for today as well, the acknowledgement of the strides that we are making, and that we are encouraged, and also that we take into account all those areas of which that you have raised, and we can only from now focus on improving. And as we make sure that as this cohort and as well as the sister profession, you assist us, the Parliament, you assist us to deliver on the mandate of the Parliament and make sure that the people of this country have an improved access to justice, as well as they get the service delivery that they expect from the Department. One part that we are aware of is that it's not easy, but we are continuing, and I think the capacity that we have brought over the past year in the department has injected the necessary agency and the energy that were required. Always they change that in the agenda is the answer. Thank you.
No. Thank you very much, PG and members of your EXCO. Thank you, DM. I would like just to communicate what we have decided as the portfolio committee. One, we have decided to take a portfolio approach in dealing with some of the portfolio related challenges. If you go through the reports, you would realize that there are issues between Legal Aid Board and Correctional Services. There are issues between Justice and Information Regulator, SIU. So we thought that we are going to be convening a meeting with the Minister and all heads of entities reporting to us, including the DG and the National Commissioner, so that that meeting would be physical, so that we can quickly thresh out some of the issues and ensure that there is maximum cooperation within the cluster. That is the first thing. And the second thing, I think there is no doubt that a lot of effort is being put, which is commendable by yourselves, all of you, in ensuring that you improve how the department works and operates, And also we are cognizant of the fact that the environment sometimes is complex. There are external dependencies like your public works and your sectors that should be factored in. We are cognizant of that fact. But we think that DG, a special effort should be put to Master's office. Even with the answers we have received today, we are not yet convinced that you are on top of issues with respect to the Master's office. And we think that that office is very close to vulnerable people. We should put a lot of effort there. And members, I think as we are thinking about writing a report to the National Assembly, we should be really thinking seriously about what the DG said about issues between them and CETA. Because as much as we have said that the Master's office is very close to our people, even the functioning of court, these court recorders are very key to service delivery. Now, I think I'm speaking on behalf of all members. From the report we are getting, we have a reason to be worried that one or two things might not go well come February. And it will not be because of only yourselves, but you are also dependent on the other people that is the CETA. That we should be really thinking as to how we should intervene on this area, because even this thing that one machine can service a number of courts, I think it does have an effect on increasing backlogs. So we should really be coming to us to say, how do we intervene to ensure that this issue between the department and the CETA is really resolved, and all the machines, in fact, the courts have the necessary tools to function properly, because that is at the core phase of our service delivery. So in the report, I think we should be really thinking about what we should be proposing to the National Assembly, that the National Assembly should be resolving on, in as far as this matter is concerned. We have taken note that DG, you want now to challenge the Premier League, and you are no more comfortable with being on the top eight. And they were also bearing in mind that this time next year, when we meet with yourselves, it will be the last time that we'll be meeting with yourselves as this portfolio committee. Now, the issue would be how all of us want to be remembered in this term. Do we want to be remembered at the end of the term as the people who were just fixing the Zama-Zama? Or do we want to be remembered as people who drastically brought change to the lives of our people? Do we want to be people who would be remembered that during their term of office, people had to cases had to be postponed because there were broken court recordings because of poor contract management? Or do we want to be known as people who during their term of office, they found a very difficult department but made a significant difference? I think it's a concerted effort, not only from your side, but from all of us. Ourselves as a minister, as a deputy minister, yourselves, we have to ensure that our lives during our time are better than, in fact, the lives of our people during our times are better than when we took office. That is the challenge that we have to ensure that we meet. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
All right, the best to you, Chair, and the members.